Ruth chapter 1. In the days when the judges ruled, there was famine in the land. So a man from Bethlehem, Judah, together with his wife and sons, went to live for a while in the country of Moab. The man's name was Elimelech, his wife's name was Naomi, and the names of his two sons were Mahlon and Chilion. They were Ephrathites from Bethlehem, Judah, and they went to Moab and lived there. Now Elimelech, Naomi's husband, died, and she was left with her two sons. They married Moabite women, one named Orpah and the other Ruth. After they had lived there about 10 years, both Mahlon and Chilion also died, and Naomi was left without her two sons and her husband. When Naomi heard in Moab that the Lord had come to the aid of his people by providing food for them, she and her daughters-in-law prepared to return home from there. With her two daughters-in-law, she left the place where she had been living and set out on the road that would take them back to the land of Judah. Then Naomi said to her two daughters-in-law, "Go back, each of you, to your mother's home. May the Lord show you kindness, as you have shown kindness to your dead husbands and to me. May the Lord grant that each of you will find rest in the home of another husband." Then she kissed them goodbye, and they wept aloud, and said to her, "We will go back with you to your people." But Naomi said, "Return home, my daughters. Why would you come with me? Am I going to have any more sons who could become your husbands? Return home, my daughters. I am too old to have another husband. Even if I thought there was still hope for me, even if I had a husband tonight and then gave birth to sons, would you wait until they grew up? Would you remain unmarried for them? No, my daughters. It is more bitter for me than for you, because the Lord's hand has turned against me." At this, they wept aloud again. Then Orpah kissed her mother-in-law goodbye, but Ruth clung to her. "Look," said Naomi, "your sister-in-law is going back to her people and her gods. Go back with her." But Ruth replied, "Don't urge me to leave you or to turn back from you. Where you go, I will go, and where you stay, I will stay. Your people will be my people, and your God, my God. Where you die, I will die, and there I will be buried. May the Lord deal with you, be it ever so severely, if death separates you and me." When Naomi realized that Ruth was determined to go with her, she stopped urging her. So the two women went on until they came to Bethlehem. When they arrived in Bethlehem, the whole town was stirred because of them, and the woman exclaimed, "Can this be Naomi?" "Don't call me Naomi," she told them. "Call me Mara, because the Almighty has made my life very bitter. I went away full, but the Lord has brought me back empty. Why call me Naomi? The Lord has afflicted me. The Almighty has brought misfortune upon me." So Naomi returned from Moab, accompanied by Ruth the Moabite, her daughter-in-law, arriving in Bethlehem as the barley harvest was beginning.
Thank you, Gina. How do we react when life doesn't go as expected? When we're surrounded by problems or we're in trouble? Maybe an awful bereavement. There's plenty of bereavement in today's chapter, isn't there, that Gina read for us. All the men in it die. Or maybe our marriage hasn't worked. Or the kids have been a disappointment. Perhaps we make a life decision which seems right at the time, but the rules change. Or it doesn't turn out well. A job move or a promotion that results in redundancy. Or the new employer goes bust, or we lose our home and we feel bitter about it. Or maybe life just forces stuff on us that we can do nothing about. We can't see the point of it and start thinking to ourselves, surely it wasn't meant to be like this. It wasn't meant to work out like this. Surely this couldn't have been the plan. If you're a Christian, you might think, why does God let this happen? Why is he doing this? If you're not a Christian, you might respond with, well, what's your God like that he lets this sort of stuff happen? How can this be a kind God who lets people suffer? Obviously, he doesn't know what he's doing. How can this God of yours be in control? We're going to look today at what the book of Ruth, and particularly the first chapter, has to tell us about these questions. Ruth's a remarkable little book. It has four chapters, and we're going to do one each week for the next four Wednesdays. And it's got a lot to teach us about how God operates in the affairs of ordinary men and women, while at the same time working out his purposes in history. On the face of it, the book of Ruth might just look like a love story. And indeed, it is in a sense. That's part of it. Ruth is a real story about real people acting out their lives. But it's much more than that, as we'll see. In chapter 1, our passage today that Gina read for us, sets up the narrative beautifully, and we see that it involves three decisions. Elimelech makes the first decision when he decides to move from Bethlehem to the foreign country of Moab with his wife Naomi. Naomi makes the second decision years later when she decides to move back to Bethlehem again. And Ruth, one of Naomi's daughters-in-law, makes the third decision, which is to go back with Naomi to Bethlehem. And we notice that all three of them, Elimelech, Naomi and Ruth, make their own decision. They're not forced to do what they do. Although famine and circumstances are factors, the narrative shows that in each case, they're free to decide. They make their own decisions, as do we. And this brings us to our first point on the handout. We make our own decisions, and we live with the consequences. God doesn't force us to do things, and we can't blame him if our decisions go wrong. Elimelech makes his decision in verse 1. Let's read it. In the days when the judges ruled, there was a famine in the land. So a man from Bethlehem in Judah, together with his wife and two sons, went to live for a while in the country of Moab. The man's name was Elimelech. His wife's name was Naomi. Now our author is pretty emphatic about this. Elimelech goes from Bethlehem in Judah to the country of Moab. He repeats it in verse 2, just in case we missed it the first time. They left Bethlehem and went to Moab. It's almost as if he can't get over it. And that's not surprising, because Moab was a traditional enemy of Israel. It had oppressed Israel in the past. And not only that, but Elimelech is leaving Bethlehem, which means house of bread, in Judah. There's a lot of naming in these first few verses. We haven't got time to go into them all, but the names are quite significant. And Bethlehem means house of bread, and it's in Judah where God lives with his people. And Elimelech's going away from all that to Moab, whose god Chemosh demanded human sacrifice. Talk about going over to the dark side. And we're not going to judge Elimelech. The Bible doesn't give us a verdict, so we shouldn't do one for ourselves. But his decision does look a bit questionable, doesn't it? It doesn't look as if God made him do it. And in fact, the striking thing in these first four verses is that there's no mention of God at all. Elimelech even gives his sons Canaanite names. What's his relationship with God? I don't know. He makes his decision, and he and his family face the consequences. And his actions leave Naomi with her predicament in verse 5, where after about 10 years we read that Naomi was left without her two sons and without her husband. All Naomi has left to show for a great slug of her life spent in Moab are two widowed daughters-in-law and the fact that she too is a widow. So Naomi makes her decision to go back to Bethlehem in verse 6. When Naomi heard in Moab that the Lord had come to the aid of his people, that's back in Bethlehem, by providing food for them, she and her daughters-in-law prepared to return home from Moab. Her experience in Moab has been bitter. God allows his people to suffer sometimes. Like Naomi here, we won't always understand it. We can't see the bigger picture of what God's doing any more than Naomi could. But it was her decision, as with Elimelech. God didn't force it. She resolves to go home to Bethlehem, and she tells her two widowed Moabite daughters-in-law to stay in Moab, stay in their own country, start new lives for themselves. A quick word about verses 12 and 13, because they raise an issue that becomes very important later in the book of Ruth, and we're going to look at it in a couple of weeks' time. A woman depended on her husband to provide for the family, and if her husband died, she was dependent on her children. If she had none, she was vulnerable and risked destitution. So Jewish law provided that if a man died and left a widow without any children, the man's brother should marry the widow, look after her, and continue the family line. And the firstborn son of that marriage would then be considered the dead man's child and heir. So if Naomi had had other sons, apart from the two that died, they would have been duty-bound to marry the two daughters-in-law, Ruth and Orpah. This would have given Ruth and Orpah some sort of security. But Naomi didn't have any more sons, and she's not pregnant, and she's not going to get pregnant because her husband's died. And anyway, even if she was pregnant, would Ruth and Orpah really wait for the son to be born, to grow up and be a man, and then marry them? No, that's ridiculous, Naomi tells Ruth and Orpah in verse 12. Return home, my daughters. I am too old to have another husband. And even if I thought there was still hope for me, even if I had a husband tonight and then gave birth to sons, would you wait till they grew up? Would you remain unmarried for them? No, my daughters. And this issue flushes out Ruth's decision. Orpah goes back to her people and her gods in Moab. Ruth refuses. Look with me at what is surely one of the most poetic and heartwarming vows to be found in all literature. At least I think it is, in Ruth's reply in verse 16. But Ruth replied, "Don't urge me to leave you or to turn back from you. Where you go, I will go. And where you stay, I will stay. Your people will be my people, and your God, my God. Where you die, I will die. And there I will be buried." Has anyone ever said that to you? Have you ever said that to anyone else? Ruth will leave her country, her culture, her gods, her chances of a new life, home in Moab, in order to go with her mother-in-law, Naomi, to go as a childless foreigner to Judah, where two of the most stigmatized minorities were foreigners and childless women. So these are our three decisions. Elimelech starts the ball rolling by moving to Moab with bitter consequences, Naomi's decision, and then Ruth's, set in train the return to Bethlehem, and, as we shall see, an extraordinary sequence of events. Though nobody at this stage can foresee the consequences. And they can't foresee the consequences because they're not in control. And the more we look at this chapter and this book, the more we see God in control. Hence our second point on the handout. God's in control, although on the surface this is not obvious. There are no bits here with "and the Lord said" or appearances of God in the narrative. God makes no appearances in person here, as he did to Abraham and Moses and the prophets and so forth. There's no hint that God inhibits people's freedom of action here. They take their own decisions, and they're responsible for them. And yet, you've only got to read through the book of Ruth to see God's hand all over it. God's continually working his purpose as out, even if his activity is below the radar, as it were. Below the surface, unnoticed by people, perhaps, as they live out their daily lives. God allows Bethlehem to suffer a famine. Presumably, nobody in Bethlehem at the time had the foggiest idea why God would do that. The famine is sorted by verse 6, where we read that God had provided food for his people again. Naomi's bitter predicament is going to take a lot more time to sort out. But we will see just how spectacularly God does sort it out and use it for her benefit, to an extent and with a blessing almost unimaginable. God sometimes does empty us in order to fill us with his goodness. God's in total control, and Naomi sees this. She doesn't doubt it for a minute. In verse 6, she recognises that it is God who's provided for his people. And 7 times in verses 8 to 21, she refers to the Lord or the Almighty. In verse 8, the Lord show you kindness. In verse 9, the Lord grant that each of you. In verse 13, the Lord has turned against me. In verse 20, the Almighty has made my life very bitter. In verse 21, the Lord has brought me back empty. The Lord has afflicted me. The Almighty has brought misfortune upon me. Naomi may be hurt and angry about what's happened to her, that, as she puts it, the Lord's hand has turned against her, but she is honest with God. She knows her life is in her hands, in his hands, and her faith in him is clear. She keeps trusting God, even when she can't see where he's leading her. Have you ever been alone in a foreign country with no money and no means of support? Naomi's position was desperate. Yet she knew God was running the show, like it or not. As David Jackman puts it, Naomi is at the end of her tether, but she knows that God is at the other end. And her faith makes an impression on Ruth, who says in verse 16, "Your God shall be my God." Ruth's adoption of Naomi's God as her own underlies the whole of her vow to Naomi, and it's the turning point in Ruth's life. God is active all the time in the everyday, humdrum, anonymous bits and pieces of life, working out his purposes to bring blessing. And this can be difficult for us to accept, can't it? Apart from the fact that sometimes God doesn't seem to be there at all, how is it possible that people have freedom of action to take their own decisions, even to accept or reject God, and yet God remains in total control? How can God give us free will, yet determine his purposes and fulfill them? And I guess perhaps we'll never understand this totally in this life. But surely the critical question then is this: if God's in control of our lives, what's he like? What we need to know is how he's going to exercise that control. Is it going to be good news for us or bad news? How are we to respond? And to answer that, we need to look at God's character, which brings us to our third heading. What is God like? We want to know God's character. And of course, we read the Bible to see what God's like. And in Jesus, we have the exact likeness or imprint of God's character. But Old Testament Jews like Ruth hadn't seen Jesus' life on earth. And anyway, since we're reading the book of Ruth, shouldn't we look for an answer in Ruth? In her promise to return to Bethlehem with Naomi, Ruth makes a solemn vow that goes way beyond the requirements of law, duty, tradition, love, or family convention. She can quite easily go back to Moab, as the other daughter-in-law, Orpah, does. There's no criticism of Orpah here for doing that, but Ruth doesn't. She makes her vow to Naomi in an act of supreme kindness. It's a solemn promise, a kindness that commits her totally to Naomi as family and to Naomi's God. There's no reason for her to do it other than sheer loving kindness. And as we read on in Ruth, we see that kindness is woven into the whole fabric of the narrative from beginning to end. And such kindness opens a chink of light for us into the character of God. God is kindness. And God's kindness is a committed, generous, overflowing, deep loving kindness. It's part of God's covenant love. His kindness simply reflects his character. That's how God is. That's what he's like. Ruth shows that sort of kindness to Naomi as she accepts Naomi's God. And we shall see how, in turn, God adopts Ruth and showers his gracious love and kindness on her. What Ruth could not, of course, know is that hundreds of years later, God would show the enormity of his kindness and love for all of us in sending Jesus Christ to live and die among us, to achieve unimaginable blessings for countless people. God is kind. So what are we to conclude from all this? We all have to face life's ups and downs, the circumstances which come our way, the stuff God sends us for his own best reasons. What do we do when it's not going according to plan? If you're a Christian, you can trust in God's character. You can know that he's the same now as he was in the time of Ruth and Naomi. And he always will be. He's in control, working for our good. If you're not a Christian, well, I just don't have easy answers for all the stuff life throws at us. They're not here, we're not given them. Sometimes we cannot know why a particular tragedy has happened. Sometimes we cannot know why God allows us to suffer or struggle desperately. We just can't see the big picture. But we can look to the overwhelming evidence and experience of thousands of Christians that God is in complete control and works through all the ordinary details and events of our lives to fulfill his purposes. And because of his kindness, we know those purposes are good, that they will be for the benefit of all who love him. And we might not see today how this works out. We face difficulties and pain and perhaps misery and bitterness. We can't see necessarily any more than Ruth and Naomi at the time could understand what was going on. Why had God done this? But in a few years, or maybe 20 or 30 years, maybe we will. Perhaps we'll look back and see how God has been at work all the time. Maybe we won't. Some of us may not see it in this lifetime. Sometimes we'll have to wait for the new creation to make sense of all that's happened in this life and see how God's covenant loving kindness and his constant working out of his purposes have in retrospect been evident through all our lives, all the time. But the one great lesson from Ruth at the bottom of the handout is that line from Paul's letter to the Romans, Romans 8:28. And we know that in all things God works for the good of those who love him. The book of Ruth will prove to be a wonderful example of God doing exactly that. And if you face a life decision, pray not so much for God to give you the right decision, but for him to purify your heart and your motives to seek him first, to know his kindness and his control. And pray for the courage to commit to him unconditionally, come what may, in the way Ruth committed to God and to Naomi. Then you can be quite confident that God will lead you. Let's pray. Heavenly Father, thank you that you work all things for the benefit of your people. Please help us to trust your promises, even through the dark, painful times, when we can't see you and we don't understand. And please help us to hold fast to your promises of great blessing for those who love you. Amen.